Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your role with the show.
Hi, I'm Shauna Hammack, and I play Richard Henry Lee in the 1776 Revival.
Yes, it's the musical revival of 1776. It's going to be at the prestigious Kennedy Center here in the nation's capital, running June 27th through July 16th. So, hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Jason.
All right. Well, before I want to get into what, you know, the premise of the show and, you know, the characters and all that. But before any of that, just, you know, start off, give me a little soundbite on why it's perfect that it's coming here right around the 4th of July. You know what I mean? It's called 1776. What more could you want to do than stage this in the nation's capital? It's perfect.
It is perfect. I've been lucky enough to play the Kennedy Center before and actually over July 4th. But this time is very special, getting to perform 1776, which is a musical about the writing and the creation of the Declaration of Independence, about the forming of a nation, to perform it in the nation's capital, like you said, on July 4th, the day it supposedly signed the Declaration, is really kind of awesome. I'm so excited to be there. And yeah, the Kennedy Center, you really kind of can't beat the Kennedy Center as far as an iconic location and theater.
Awesome. And yeah, so sort of tell maybe if there's any of our younger listeners, you know, everyone knows and loves Hamilton and rightfully so, but sort of talk about, you know, how this sort of, you know, was even predated this. This was like what, in 1969 on Broadway was when they first did 1776. Talk about
Correct.
Sort of how, yeah. So yeah, something like, you know, hey, you know, if you love Hamilton, you're going to love this as well.
Well, Hamilton, we love Hamilton. Let's not even get started about Hamilton. That will be another hour of conversation. but Hamilton came after 1776. There's actually quite a few themes in Hamilton that Lin-Manuel Miranda, the writer of Hamilton, spoke about how 1776 was a huge influence on him. And so, yeah, 1776 was written and won the Tony in 1969. And traditionally is a cast of all men, white men, who play our founding fathers. And of course, two women who play their wives, Martha Jefferson and Abigail Adams. But in our version of 1776 here in 2023, we are a company made up fully of completely diverse female, trans, and non-binary company. So you actually will not find a male identifying person in our company, which is sometimes challenging to people, but that's kind of the point. We want people, when they come to the show, because we haven't changed the show. Let me say that first of all, it is exactly as written with one addition. We got permission to add one letter that Abigail Adams wrote to John Adams in real life. And so it's called Remember the Ladies. It's a historical letter. But with the exception of that, it is fully the show written in 1969. But because we are the people that are playing these roles, these quote founding fathers, we want to remind people that every single person that's on that stage wasn't thought of when the Declaration was written and put into effect. And so it's a way to challenge preconceived notions of what it means to be an American and what it means to have built a nation, and whose backs did we build it on? And what have we accomplished and succeeded in this writing of the Declaration and the promises that were made within it? And what do we still have to work on? And so it's really pretty thrilling to be part of this cast in this moment in time. And I'm so happy to be playing the Kennedy Center.
Perfectly said. And just speak a little more to that of like anytime we go back and grapple with history, I mean, it's sort of like you're trying to portray this sort of duality, this sort of hypocrisy that, you know, on the one hand, we're celebrating, you know, the great, I guess, democratic principles that are written down. But on the other hand, it's hypocritical because it's all white men, slave owners that are writing it. And they've left out they say all men are created equal, but they've left out other genders and races and everything else. So talk about how, you know, your version is sort of trying to, I don't want to say right those wrongs, but you know what I mean? It's grappling with a very complicated story.
It is very complex the way we're putting on this production. People have such deep love for our show, for 1776, the musical. They have such deep love for it because they watch it every July 4th on, you know, TMC or you know, classic murder movie channel. You know, people love the show. And so to come to the nation, starting on Broadway and at ART when we did the show there as well, but to come to the nation, to each of these cities, to show them a show that they're very familiar with and have deep love for, but also to point out the flaws of a nation that we all love, because let's be honest, we all love this nation. We love being Americans. But to point out the fact that we are not a perfect society, we are not a perfect nation, is sort of radical in a very interesting way, because we want to be the leaders in the world, correct? We want to be the way to lead in a democratic nation, as a democratic society. And so to show the machinations that went into the creating of the Declaration, the things that people had to concede, the things that the subjects that originally, okay, I'm just going to say this. I've never learned in my school coming up, learning American history, I never learned that there was a clause in the actual Declaration that would have removed slavery from people that were enslaved, that were brought over from other nations, from Africa specifically. But I never knew that that was an actual thing.
And what happened? Did they just pluck it out and say, no, we can't give up our cash cow? You know what I mean? Like, yes. What happened to that clause?
Literally, that's exactly what happened. It became a point of contention between the North and the South. And because for like one of the first times, the Congress voted to have this decision be unanimous, that it had to be unanimous. It couldn't just be a majority vote. I think it was one of the very first times it ever existed that it had to be unanimous for the 13 colonies to agree. So to make sure that we got the unanimous decision to break away from Great Britain, to become our own country, people had to give some things up that were really important socially. And the biggest point was the removal of slavery, where it was a major point of economic value to most of the Southern colonies. Virginia, even the character I play, Richard Henry Lee, right? He is famously known as the one who proposes, brings the resolution to become their own individual country, America as an own individual country. He was not fighting because he wanted to get rid of slavery. He was fighting because he wanted to remove the taxes that would be put on his enslaved peoples. He wanted the ability to, and this is going to sound maybe harsh and a bit too gross, but he wanted the ability to breed his enslaved people without being taxed on it, so that he could create more income for his family and for his colony and become wealthier. He wanted to lessen the importation of enslaved people, and he wanted to just have the ability to create more with the product that he already had. And I don't like calling enslaved people product, but that is how he thought of it. That is how
this
most
is the
of the
this is the character you play.
This is correct. This is Richard Henry Lee. So he's thought of as the character and the comedy relief in the show, and he is. Right. But in real life, he was one of the people that was fighting to protect the economic basis of his whole fortune, which was the enslavement of people. And
yeah, so this is the magnitude of the dichotomy that we're talking about here.
Exactly.
You know, this comic relief character, but then you look up the real history and this is what happened. And I always think of what is Fred, you know, everyone celebrates 4th of July, and yes, we should celebrate what's good about America and how far we've come and all of that stuff. We absolutely need to say that. But like at the same time, there's the Frederick Douglass, you know, what to the slave is the 4th of July. Like, that's what he wrote. So I hate that the phrase woke is somehow a negative, or that I'm against critical race theory. Just explain to them that, like, we're not teaching an alternate history. Like, don't you want to know actually what happened?
Yeah. What's so interesting about our show and the reception we've had across the country right now, we are in South Carolina, which in our show is kind of the bad guy, you know, in the sense of they're the one that they're the ultimate holdout. Of unless you get rid of this slavery, anti-slavery clause, we're not signing on to this declaration, and it will kill it. It will kill any option of America becoming a free country away from Great Britain. And so we're in that colony right now. And so to be performing this show is really interesting, because a lot of people would like to think of America as the shining beacon, right? And it is in a great many ways. Do not get me wrong. But what we have to realize is it's not perfect. We are not perfect. And we are built on the backs of people that were enslaved and stolen from their own lives in their own country. The way we start our show is we have a cast member, Brooke Simpson, who is a fully indigenous woman from the Haulwassapony tribe. And what we were doing in rehearsals way back when, back in April of last year, she came to our directors and said, I'd like there to be something in our show, if just an acknowledgement that our nation was founded on land that was nations already for generations. So even the forming of America, we formed it on land that had already been nations by indigenous people for generations. So even this building of a nation, we take the moment right before we start the show to go, look, yes, it's amazing. We're American. We're built here. There were nations here already that we overcame and disregarded and stole land from. So that's how we start our show. So it's a little bit of a challenge to people who love the traditionalist view of 1776 being all white men and two women, generally white, as their wives, and to just have us as cast members in this show is a confrontation in a way. It challenges people in ways they don't expect, because you know, we hold these men, these founding fathers, in such high regard that they've almost become like semi-deities, that they couldn't possibly have been less than perfect because look what they accomplished. But they accomplished this wonderful creation of a nation by disregarding other people. They really were looking out for themselves. They were looking out for themselves as white landowning men. They weren't looking out for women. They weren't looking out for poor people, white or otherwise. They certainly weren't looking out for the enslavement of people other than to protect it, to increase their own wealth. And so it still is relevant today. We're still fighting these fights that happened back in 1776 when we were trying to become a nation. We are still trying to recognize that bad stuff happened back then in regards to racism and inherent privilege. And we are still fighting those fights today. And I think the only way we can actually win the fight, if I want to call it a winning, the only way to really try and find true freedom and true equality for people, all Americans, is to acknowledge what has happened in our past, to really bring it to light and go, look, we're not perfect. And we started off kind of on the wrong foot. And in a sense, we're still doing that. So how do we correct these ultimate wrongs? How do we correct the injury to Indigenous people, the injury to people of different races other than the white Americans? How do we fix something that the brokenness that a nation has been built upon. You know, I think it's in the Bible, it's like you don't build your house on sand. And in a sense that our great democratic experiment is not necessarily sand, but man, it's a little rocky, you know what I mean? And to not acknowledge the fact that we aren't perfect, to not acknowledge the fact that we let some people down and we have forgotten people and purposefully pushed people aside and said, well, their freedom doesn't mean as much as long as I'm okay. To acknowledge that means I think we really can move forward in a better way, to move towards the America that we all want this country to be. That is, you know, freedom and justice for all. So how do we do that? And sometimes we do that by creating art that challenges people on a level they don't expect. We challenge you by being me. I'm a female identifying white woman playing Richard Henry Lee, who is a gentleman from the South. We have a Black John Adams. We have a Black Benjamin Franklin. And those two happen to identify as female, but we also have trans members in our company. We have non-binary people in our company playing these founding fathers. And just to realize, look, we are all humans who exist in this nation, and we all want the same rights. We all want to be able to walk down the street and not fear for our safety. We want our brothers and sisters and others to have the rights to marry whomever they want. It's about equality. It's about freedom. And sometimes you just have to use art to get that message across, to show people perhaps the skewedness of their thinking and of just to make you think. If we can just make one person think, even if they're not about this, right? Even if they end up not liking our production of 1776, if we make you think about it, we've done our job. Our job is not to make you love us like you probably love Hamilton, right? Our job is to make you go, wait, do I know that? Do I know that fact? Do I have to look up this history now to see if that's actually true? Or is that just a dramatization for the sake of theater? If we can get people to really think about this nation, about what we can do to make it better, and also maybe the inherent biases that we hold within ourselves without knowing them, perhaps, man, we'll have succeeded immensely. And that makes me happy. to be a part of the show, to be a part of a piece of art that you like it or you don't, but man, we're going to make you think. Yeah, I'm proud to be a part of that.
Yes, and having this exact conversation, this making you think conversation, is symbolically the beacon on the hill thing that America is, that, like, that's what we're, that is the beacon, not keeping our heads in the sand about all the negative history. Like, no, like, it's what happened happened.
Yeah.
People have all, marginalized people have always existed. They didn't just suddenly come out after post quote woke or whatever the hell they think it started. And people have always been around. Everyone just wants freedom and equality. And having that conversation is the beacon of America that we're trying to uphold, like, at least to me.
Yeah, so for sure.
Remind us. So we've talked a lot about, you know, the all the ways that it's, you know, a new revolutionary 1776. What are some of the same music, the musical numbers that people know and love? You know, give it, we got to say it is a musical. So what are some of the musical numbers, and how is this new, you know, how are they filtered through this new lens you're talking about?
Well, I always think of 1776 as a play with music because it is a musical. Let's be honest. It is absolutely musical. Won best musical in 1969 for the Tony Award. But there's a lot of acting scenes, right? We actually have the historically longest book scene, which is a song, a scene between two songs in musical theater history. It's 20 minutes long in scene three. So there's a lot of speaking, but the music is so fantastic. And what's lovely about our version, so all the songs remain, they've been reorchestrated. And it was with approval of Sherwin Edwards, oh man, I've said that wrong, Sherman Edwards' estate. His son actually was involved with us. His son showed us the original demos that his father had first written. Now, a fun fact about the composer was he was a writer in the Brill Building. He wrote pop songs for Elvis. Like, he was a pop writer. And so everybody thinks of 1776 as being fully orchestrated and so bombastic. And it was. We've actually gone back towards his original demos. So there's a bit of a more of a pop feel, not like rap or anything, or, you know, that would be amazing. Thank you, Hamilton. But we have more of a sound that he originally intended. I don't know if it's a true story or not, but there's a story where Stephen Sondheim actually said famously at some dinner or something that, you know, he couldn't possibly know how to write a musical that would win a Tony because he didn't know what he was doing. He was a pop writer. And so Sherman Edwards just like went and fully orchestrated everything. So it was like a 28-piece orchestra suddenly, and everything became more symphonic. And it did win the Tony. But originally it had more of an Americana feel. Like, we've added for the first time in our show guitars and stringed instruments, like a mandolin and a banjo is actually in our show. And there's a quintessential Americana feel to some of our numbers that it didn't exist before. One of the things I think is such a shame is that we don't have a cast album, but because this music is so fantastically orchestrated and the talent of all of the performers in this show, the voices in the show, it's going to blow your hair back. Like, everyone is so gifted at what they do. And yeah, man, just come and see our show because you're going to love our music. You're going to be like, wait, we need the album. And we're going to be like, sorry, not yet. But I love the music so much.
And is this the first time that 1776 has been done, you know, with the diverse cast you're talking about? Or you know what I mean? I want to know where this falls, you know, in the historic nature of this.
I think there was a reading or a workshop, perhaps even a performance of it, that was an all-female, and I think it was actually all-female at the time, a female cast that was done at like 54 below. And I know that other regional theaters, since it's been in existence since 1969, there's been other versions, I'm sure, of this show that has had a more diverse cast. But as far as I'm aware, we're the very first cast, certainly professional Broadway performance, Broadway running cast that has been completely diverse as far as female, trans, non-binary, and ethnicity as well. So, and gender expression, which is cool. It feels historic. It feels revolutionary, even though, like, yeah, it's revolutionary. How silly, because it's 1776. But it feels like an act of service in a way to be a part of this show, to be spreading the message and trying to change the view, how people view our world and our nation, just changing the gaze just slightly, just to go, oh, wait, maybe what I know to be true about America is a rose-tinted glass. You know, like, maybe I need to contemplate what I actually know about our founding and who these people were. And just to do that, I think is awesome. Why not? And then in DC, yeah, let's see it. Let's see how many congressmen we can get. Oh, that'd be fun. I think they're on the break. But man, I would like to have all of the Congress people come see our show. Just go, by the way, we need to talk to each other. Can we talk to each other, please?
Yes, that's the cool thing about DC and at the Kennedy Center. You never know which influential, you know, leaders will be in attendance in the audience, especially for a show like 1776. Well, thank you so much for such a in-depth conversation. This was great. Again, everybody, come on out to 1776. It's going to be at the Kennedy Center June 27th through July 16th. So get your tickets. Hey, thank you for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jason. Thank you so much for having me on. I hope everybody comes out and sees us.
Absolutely. Be well.
Bye-bye now.